You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Welcome back from spring break. The Office of International Programs is accepting applications now until March 30th for the International Peer Mentoring Program. Gain an experience working with diverse groups, develop leadership skills, and earn course credit by helping new international students at WSU. Pick up your application in Bryan Hall, room 108, or Smith Gym, room 214. For questions, email Leif McNeil at intnl.pgm.pm.grad@wsu.edu. If you'd like that email address, give us a call, 335-2207, and I'll read it back to you. The Avery Microcomputer Lab in Avery Hall shows free movies every Friday at 5 p.m. Movies include Outfoxed, Talladega Nights, Brother, The Goonies, The Rocky Horror Picture Show, Children of Men, and more. For a full listing or for more information, visit the AML website at www.aml.wsu.edu. Had a bad weekend or maybe all week? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop by their office in Ad Annex, room 305. They are open Monday through Thursday from 9 to 5 and Friday 9 to 1. KZUU DJs read public service announcements like what you just heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in Smith Gym, room 126B, or fill out a form online located under the staff button and email it to psa@kzuu.org. For more information, call our office, 335-2208. On the show, we are going to talk, well, I guess it's the nostalgia hour this particular day. Maybe the nostalgia 2 hours, I don't know. I was looking back through some old emails I've had saved over the last couple years, and it's pretty interesting, some of the stuff that I've read in there. There's quite a few things that actually still relate to what's going on today in the world. Of course, we had WSU men's basketball playing in the tournament. The disappointment in the second round, some intramural sports information coming up. Also, PARD is up to it again. They're writing letters to the editor claiming that they're this group that is all about responsible development, when in reality, all they are, and we all know this, they're a anti-Walmart group. However, they, in this letter, try to show that they're more broad-ranging, and more or less, they're waving their magic wand saying, we accept everything except Walmart, more or less. And there is one exception to it, but I'd like to speak about that in a little bit. King County, Washington is no longer King County, Washington. More on that. Peace protesters and the need for cops, bicycle riders clogging up the streets when they have their own bike trails, and are prisons secure? Do you believe the prisons are secure? Are they a secure place? Do you believe that the bottom line is, do you believe prisons are secure? You're probably going to say no, but maybe you say yeah. Maybe you think, hey, yeah, that Supermax. I mean, it's very rare that somebody actually escapes from, say, Walla Walla or somewhere else, that somebody makes it over the wall or whatever they need to do to get out of there. So, yeah, they're pretty secure. They have very few rights in there, so they don't have the ability to do too much. Yeah, I'd say it's pretty secure. Also, think about this. One day you're a wildland firefighter, you're jumping from airplanes, landing in the trees to put out fires in the backwoods. You're a football star, you're a three sports star back in high school, and then something happens and you have to live with the effects of it from that time on. It's pretty interesting. Also, Anderson, Alaska. I'm sure you might not have heard about this, but they're actually having a land to give away, trying to get people to move up there. IKEA a couple of weeks ago announced that they're going to start charging for plastic bags, and I have an idea about how to use that to your benefit. And it's a total that IKEA thing. I'll get in. Let me get into it later on. But anyway, it's all about being politically correct, and the proceeds are even going to a politically correct to a politically correct group. Also, I have a couple rules for life. It's sort of interesting. There's a couple rules that I think we all need to live by, and I found these on, I don't know where I found them anymore. It was out there on the web, and I really liked a couple of these, and I held on to them, and I want to share them with you today. Also, this silliness that I found many, many moons ago, and it was bits and pieces of different poems that sort of go together, and I sort of strung them together in a certain way. And I'm not saying I'm a poet. I didn't write any of this. I just strung things together. I guess you could say I remixed it. But it's sort of neat, and those, I'm sure you've heard it before, or at least bits and pieces of it before, and it's sort of fun to get a chance to listen to it again, so we'll go over that. I don't know. It'll be my debut of doing poetry online, so that might be sort of interesting to hear. I guess this isn't online either. It'll be my debut of doing poetry on the radio. Stay tuned. We have the favorite of the PES coming up, as well as Paper Cuts. Playing by another group, maybe? I don't know. Okay. Well, they don't want to play, I guess. They're being mean to me, so I'm going to go ahead and go to the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. Welcome back to the PES. Unfortunately, we will not be hearing that in any more rounds of the NC2A tournament. As most people know, on Saturday, the Cougars were eliminated after a double overtime loss to Villanova. Vanderbilt. It was a very frustrating game where we saw the same kind of thing happen to us against Oregon and USC. The threes killed us. It would be interesting to see in our losses what percentage of threes the other team was shooting. In the second half, they could not miss a three. It was like against USC. USC had an enormous, it was just this huge percentage of threes. Nobody makes threes like that. But for some reason against the Cougs, when it comes to threes, people just seem to have really good luck at times, and it sinks us, unfortunately. And we saw that happen. It's interesting. The disappointment, I was down at the sports page with lots of other Cougar fans watching the game, having some pizza and some green beverages, celebrating St. Patrick's Day. And after the game was over with, it was really quiet in there. They played the Cougar Fight song, and nobody was really in the mood to sing along with it, because we all know that we just got upset in a basketball game, that we should have won, that we had. We let slip away. I noticed Cougar Country downtown, on Grand Avenue, had a sign on the reader board saying that we are proud of you, of our Cougs. And I think that's great. I mean, when we look at just the one game in of itself, it was very disappointing. It was very frustrating to lose that game. After that point, I was pretty much, I hate talking about and dwelling on losses, especially losses that when it should have been a win, or that, you know, we sort of just let slip away a little bit. I just like to ignore it. But when we reflect back upon the whole season, and we think about what the Cougars have done, what the Cougars were supposed to quote unquote have done by the experts, and where they went, and at the beginning of the season, if you had gone up and asked most, even real Cougar fans, do you think we're going to get to the second round of the NC2A tournament? All of them would have been said, oh, wow. I mean, that would be awesome if we could. I mean, they would be excited if we got that far. Now it's like we have disappointment. We've been set to a higher standard in the span of one season. We expected more than we got. Very few people thought we'd get much past Sweet 16. Some people thought maybe the Elite Eight. Most people felt that we would have at least made it to the Sweet 16. So by getting knocked out in the second round, it was sort of a disappointing defeat. I was one of those that was definitely disappointed. But when I look back upon the whole season, I'm really happy that it was a fun, exciting season. Everybody had a good time. You heard Mary Johnson on this show a couple weeks ago talking about it. And, you know, just in the Bennett era itself, let alone the Tony Bennett era, where, you know, we actually go there expecting a victory versus wondering how much we're going to lose by that day. So it's been an exciting time, and it's only going to get better. We have one graduating senior that's a starter, Ivory Clark. everybody else is going to be back pretty much. So we're going to have a very solid team if we can continue this. Now, we are going to miss Clark. We're going to miss his defense. He was out there. He had some great plays even in the last game, and it was unfortunate that we didn't go out with the victory on that game and at least get to the Sweet 16. My bracket, though, had us going all the way. I was a believer. Unfortunately, we didn't do it. And I guess what I want, the bottom line is that I don't want to dwell on the loss. It was one game in a whole season, and the whole season of itself was a lot of positive things have happened, and a lot of good has come out of the season, and I don't want to let one loss stare in the face of all the good that's come out of the season. So I'm really happy that we had such a great season, and I think the Cougs deserve all the accolades that they have earned, and they have earned a lot this year. And I believe that we're going to see in the next couple weeks that our head coach, Tony Bennett, is going to be announced as the coach of the year. And if he doesn't get it, that will be quite the upset, too. So anyway, on to other sports. Well, on to other information about sports. Intramural sports, that is. Softball League, there's a sign-ups are actually tomorrow and Wednesday, 20th and 21st. $35 for a men's team, $25 for women and co-ed teams. The play begins on March 25th. There's a softball scramble. It's free for people who have softball teams, and that will be on March 22nd. There's a badminton league. Sign-ups also are March 20th and 21st. Play begins on March 25th. It's $12 for singles, $17 for doubles. And the last intramural sport of the season is the 4-on-4 grass volleyball tournament. Sign-ups will start April 3rd and go through the 18th. Play is on April 20th. It's $15 a team. So we are on the final three things on the intramural activity list, which I guess if you look at it, means that the school year is almost over. Spring break's done. You see the light at the end of the tunnel. Either that, you see the mounds and mounds of homework that you have yet to get done and realize that we are almost there. Well, first off, this is going to be a shorter subject, so I'll start with it first. King County has changed its name. We've talked about this on the PES before, but I want to mention it again. King County is now known as King County. Yes, that's right. Your government in King County, Washington, where you, a lot of you have chosen to stay registered to vote and where you're going to be paying a lot of taxes, who has these claims that they don't have money for a lot of things because they're so strapped for money, have found enough money to rename the county from King County to, yes, King County. That was a very bold step in renaming King County. That's right. Your elected officials said, you know what, we're going to take the bold step and we're going to rename King County to King County. Wow. I'm in shock. I'm in awe at your boldness. But what they're doing is they're renaming King County from the vice president under President Pierce, hence Pierce County. Franklin Pierce's vice president was a guy named King. And the theory is, well, he was a slave owner, therefore we shouldn't have a county named after him, therefore we're going to rename the King County, King County. This was actually done many, 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 many years ago, but King County has finally moved upon the renaming of King County to King County. And now they're going to, they just revealed the new logo of King County. They went from a crown, which really had nothing to do with the original king, to a caricature of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. So really what they've done is they renamed King County to King County, but it's named after a different person. And the different person is Martin Luther King Jr. And I think that by just calling it King County to King County is ignoring the fact of who they've renamed it after, and that there could be some confusion over the old name of King County and the new name of King County. And in order to avoid all confusion of King County and King County, which you can see, you don't know which two King Counties I just was speaking of, I am going to go ahead and from this point forward, and like I said this before, but from this point forward, King County on this show, the new King County, not the old King County. The old King County will still be King County, but the new King County will now be the Reverend Martin Luther Jr. King County. So, or the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County. That way you know for sure which county I'm speaking of. And yes, they did pay hundreds of thousands of dollars of tax money in order to make this change happen, because by golly, we don't have money to do a lot of things, but we do have money to make everybody feel good about themselves. And that's really all that matters in the world today. Not results, not actions, making people feel good about who they are. Now, Pard, speaking of feeling good about themselves, is claiming that the Crimson Village was a bad idea. In a letter that appeared in the Daily, the Pullman-Wasco Daily News, in part said, for 2 years, the Pullman Alliance for Responsible Development and others have been calling for a thorough traffic study on Bishop Boulevard. It is one of the bases of our lawsuit against Walmart and Pullman. Imagine to our surprise to read the City Council of Pullman has authorized a $45,000 $45,000 for such a study. Pard's traffic expert pointed out 108 flaws in earlier work, including many issues with the southeast end of Bishop, the central part of this new study. Now, the southeast end would be the side closest to the Stevenson Complex and Main Street and so on. Had the city used common sense 2 years ago, the study of Bishop Boulevard and all its major arterial connections and downtown could have been paid for by Walmart as a reasonable part of a full traffic study and fiscal impact study as mandated by city code. Now they are adding $45,000 in taxpayer money on top of the $27,000 spent in litigation with Pard that would have been unnecessary if this work had been done at the beginning of the development process. Pard has long argued that reasonable development of Bishop Boulevard needs to be consistent with the Pullman Comprehensive Plan. We have supported many of the recent and planned developments on Bishop, including the Fireside Grill, Crimson and Gray, the expansion of Zeppo's, and the planned new site for the Moscow Pullman Building Supply. Other developments such as the Strip Mall on Bishop are extremely ill-advised, and it is built on a floodplain at the base of a road banked in the wrong direction and will impair an already impacted area near the steep turn descent. And our main objection, of course, is that the proposed Walmart Supercenter, which is of a scale on a site that will create huge traffic problems, it is a little late for this $45,000 study to help rectify this issue. A lot of horses are already out of the barn. If done competently, there can be little doubt that without Walmart, Bishop Boulevard is a usable, attractive new shopping area. So, first off, Pard is always claiming they're not a one-hit wonder. They're here for Pullman for the long haul. It's not a group focused on just Walmart. Yet, they try to make it appear that that's not the case in this situation because they've supported all these other developments like Crimson and Gray and the Fireside Grill and the expansion of Zeppo's. Yet, how many letters to the editor did you see? How many press releases did you see get put out saying of specifically the Fireside Grill is a good because this, 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 and this? No, they didn't do anything like that. Once again, it's real easy to use verbs, to use the verbal communication to say, oh yeah, we're for this and we're for that, but not do anything about it. Why don't you take a look, follow the actions, follow Pard's actions. They're now blaming $27,000+ in spent litigation on Walmart and the city. Excuse me if I'm mistaken here, but Pard's the one who started the lawsuits. Pard's the one who's cost the $27,000. Now they're trying to spin it in such a way that it's not their fault. The issue is Pard keeps suing to stop Walmart, not suing to stop anything else. They're saying that they were for Crimson and Gray and the Fireside. Wow, what a bold statement. They also, one of their big complaints or one of their big issues with the malls is the idea of a dark store. And they support Crimson and Gray building a brand spanking new building on Bishop Boulevard and leaving their old store dark. So they're cool with a dark store. And as a matter of fact, as you already heard, they're for the expansion of the Pullman Moscow building supply. But see, the interesting thing about that is the Pullman Moscow building supply will also be leaving a dark store downtown, which is one of their big focuses. Everything should be downtown. But all of a sudden, they're cool with it because they want to seem like they're pro-growth and pro-business. So you have PARG coming out trying to say, oh, we're for these kinds of things, yet it's doing exactly what they don't want to see happen. They're getting dark stores out of the deal because of the businesses leaving them. Safeway did that when they left their old building. Safeway's old building sat empty for over a year before finally Ace Hardware is going in. How long will Crimson and Grace sit empty? It's hard to say. But anyway, and the point is that I'm just saying they need to be consistent with their arguments, and they're not being consistent right now. The only concerns they have are over Walmart, and that's clear because they have sued to stop Walmart. Now let's talk about once again, the Pullman Moscow Building Supply. What are their arguments against Walmart? Well, the scale. Well, Pullman Moscow Building Supply is putting in a 140,000 square foot building, or 100, and that's not out of scale. If 200,000 square feet is too much and 100,000 square feet is huge, 140,000 is not bad. That's within their scale. That's acceptable for their scale. So if Walmart were to scale down to 140,000 square feet, would PARG drop all lawsuits? I think not. It's not about the scale. We know that. But once again, PARG loves the kitchen sink. They throw everything they can against Walmart and see what sticks with different people. One person's like, yeah, 200,000 square feet is too big. The scale is just not right. There shouldn't be a need for a store more than 100,000 square feet. And if there is, we need to have dark store ordinances and everything. Then other people are like, well, the poor deer with the bright lights in the Walmart parking lot, the reproductive organs of the deer will shrivel and go away and will not have a good deer population. And then other people really buy into this whole, the large parking lot breeds the grounds for college students to go and party, because you know how, like, college students love to leave their home and the bars and party in large parking lots, like we see currently down in Dismore's and Safeway with those large parking lots full of big, huge, rowdy parties every... Oh, wait a minute. There's none. Oh, okay. But it's going to be different because Walmart's parking lot, it's going to be at Walmart. And what college student doesn't want to say, hey, I'm partying at Walmart every Saturday night? Okay. And they probably get a few people on that. Well, what about their other argument? Well, Walmart's parking lots breed crime because people are allowed to spend one night there. So you got grandpa and grandma driving through town in their RV and spend the night there, and all of a sudden the crime rate shoots up. Why? Grandpa and grandma not supposed to have their Geritol that they're going across state borders with? I don't know. What about Walmart? Let's take a look at Walmart in Moscow. What kind of crime is there? Why would we have a different crime rate than we would at the same or a similar kind of Walmart in Moscow? It's only 8 miles apart, and according to PARG, they're within our shopping area. And as a matter of fact, we should just do all our shopping in Moscow because they already have the stores. Why build in Pullman when we have it in Moscow? Once again, tax money would help over on this side of the state once in a while, this side of the border. So they are claiming, however, that the Crimson Village, which is the new little strip mall that they're totally against on the other side of the street from the Crimson and Gray building, that they were against it. It was a horrible idea. It was ill-advised, as they say. Yet, did you see anybody out collecting signatures saying you would not stop at a store that went into the Crimson Village? Did you see anybody writing letters to the editor saying the Crimson Village should not be built because it's going to adversely affect traffic on that steep, unbanked corner that is improperly banked? Did you hear anybody writing letters about the poor little kids who are going to get run over by cars zooming down a road with such gridlock, which never made sense to me to begin with? You're going to have all these problems of people getting squished by cars all the cars that are going to be zooming down the road. But then again, you're going to have gridlock. So which is it? But once again, the kitchen sink argument. It doesn't matter what any other argument is. Each one of them is an argument of itself, and all they have to do is try to get one person to buy into any one of their given arguments, and they get a big army of people who are against the store for all sorts of reasons, where the base group, what they're against is Walmart, not the idea of the store being built there. If it was a Costco, they'd be cool with it. If it was a Target, they'd be cool with it. But it's because it's a Walmart that they're against it. They don't want to admit that because that would ruin a lot of their arguments. That would get a lot of the people who would realize that, okay, these guys are only against this store because it's a Walmart and not for any other reason. So So we don't have them writing letters to the editor talking about the traffic issues that this store is going to cause and how dangerous it's going to be because the corner is banked wrong and it's on a steep hill, as they say. They don't have anybody writing letters about how the salmon and all the other critters in the mighty river are going to be affected by water warming with the water runoff of the big, huge cemented parking lot that's going to run straight into the stream. They're not talking about all the floodplain issues. They're not talking about the fact that they're against it altogether. They haven't filed any lawsuits to stop it. It's getting built. So here they're trying to claim that they're against this and that it was bad and that they're for responsible development, and that's what their focus is. Yet they did not do one single thing to try to slow or stop that development. Once again, follow the actions, not the words. Follow the actions of them. You will see what they're really against. They were not against that for real. Some of them might have said, oh, that's sort of dumb. That, I wouldn't build there if I were them. But were they against it? Was PARD going to do something about it? No, because they're not about responsible development for Pullman. They're against Walmart. And they're too chicken to make real claims. They just want to try to make them sound like they're this all-encompassing group. When in reality, once again, follow their actions. Their actions lead you to what they really are. They're an anti-Walmart group. And they have named themselves something other than that to try, once again, the whole kitchen sink idea. Throw as many arguments as you can at somebody, and they're bound to believe one. And if we misname our group, they might believe that we're not really an anti-Walmart group when we every once in a while make claims that over that other people can hear how we're for this and we're for that. So anyway, there we go. Walmart and PARD, the anti-Walmart group, making a claim in the letter to the editor that they were against the Crimson Village, yet they did nothing at all to actually make actions happen to stop this from, to stop the Crimson Village from being put in. Because once again, they really weren't against it. They just have to make statements as such to make it seem that they're not an anti-Walmart group. So I'm listening to the radio yesterday as I'm driving down the road. Actually, it was 2 days ago now. But being that this is the anniversary of the start of the Iraq war 4 years ago, I suppose there was a lot of protests everywhere. And you had these peace protesters and these pro-war people out in the same area demonstrating. And it cracked me up because they said they're being kept apart by cops. And I was like, is it really necessary that cops are there to keep peace protesters from fighting? Because it would seem to me that no matter what, if a war protester were to do something, if somebody who is pro-war were to go up there and try to beat up a peace protester, the peace protester is not going to do anything, are they? They're going to sit there and take whatever beating they have coming because they're peace protesters. They would never, ever, ever defend themselves under any circumstance, right? I mean, that's what they're asking the country to do. So shouldn't they follow the same standard? Therefore, the need to have cops there seems laughable. Just something that I was thinking about the other day. I thought it was pretty interesting. Also, okay, bicycle riders. So there I am driving down Grand Avenue, and there's this group of four bicycle riders. They had their spandex on. They had their bike helmets that go to the sharp point at the back to make it so they are all that much more aerodynamic. So obviously they were planning on driving, they were riding their bikes very, very fast. Yet there they are, four of them, not in a line, but sort of bunched up. So they're blocking the lane of traffic so you could not actually get around them. And they're sort of coasting, you know, a couple pedals here, a couple pedals there, but pretty much just coasting down the road. With cars lining up, getting a bunch of cars behind them, and there they go, just coasting down the road, ignoring the world around them, couldn't care about anybody else around them. All they cared about is that, hey, we're riding our bikes and we're expressing our rights by being on the road and clogging up traffic, and you people are going to have to take what we dish out. And don't we look cool on our bike helmets and our spandex? Well, guess what? This is the same area that we have spent thousands of dollars building a bike trail that they could use. But instead of using that bike trail, no, they had to use the road. They had to clog up the road by driving 15 miles an hour under the speed limit on that roadway. If you want to ride on the road and go with the flow of traffic and go at the near the rate of traffic, cool beans. More power to you. But if you're going to coast and you're going to do 15 miles an hour under the speed limit, why don't you get on that bike trail that was made for you and all your friends? I thought it was ridiculous that we are building bike trails if people are going to choose to ride on the roads anyway and clog up traffic. And if somebody wasn't paying attention and hit one of those people, you know there would have been a big outcry over the fact that people don't pay attention when they're driving their cars and these poor people on bikes just got run over and, oh, gee willikers, we should do something about this problem. And it's like, no, the problem was all based on the people on the bikes to begin with. So another thing I was thinking about over the last 2 weeks, there's a football coach that I know who is now living with Parkinson's disease. And it's interesting. I've had conversations with him. And at one time, he was a wildland firefighter. I mean, he's out there battling the fires on the lines. He's a football player. He's a star football player, you know, out there hitting people like crazy and on and on and on. And, you know, he's living a very active lifestyle. He wasn't, you know, somebody who sat at a desk at a computer. I mean, he was a very active person and was very into sports and into things like that. Then all of a sudden, he's hit with a debilitating disease in Parkinson's that pretty much takes away his abilities to do the things that he's always loved to do. And it's sort of interesting because he hasn't totally given up what he loves to do. He's not going to be able to play the sports that he used to. He's not going to be able to, you know, jump from an airplane and land in a backwoods area somewhere and put out fires, and he's not going to be able to play football anymore, but he's still out there coaching. But it's really interesting to watch. I mean, he has to have a chair near him so he can sit down at times while he's on the sidelines. He does what he can. When he walks, he walks very slowly, and at times his whole body sort of stops for a minute, and then he has to get going again. It's really interesting to watch because you sort of wonder, how would other people deal with this situation? How would other people who have had everything positive for them that have never dealt with any real adversity in their life all of a sudden get afflicted with such a disease that it takes away everything that you used to do that you enjoyed? At what point are you going to be really frustrated, and are you going to start giving up on everything and get bitter? I'm sure maybe at one time he got that way too. I would think there would be very few people that are afflicted with some sort of major life change that has taken away what they have always felt their life is, that will at one point start feeling a little bitter about things. And you know, you get over it at some point usually, and you'll realize, okay, life is different for me now, and I'm going to do new things, and I'm going to find new things that I enjoy, and I'm going to do what I can with the old things in order to still at least participate in some way. What was interesting is last year, this very football coach was coaching in a game where there was pretty much 18 to 24 year olds playing the sport, and it was right at the end of the half, and a person from the other team had made a horrible cheap shot on his quarterback, and this coach, as quickly as he could, ran out on the field, went up to that other player and grabbed him and threatened to kick his rear end. So it was pretty interesting. I mean, obviously the Parkinson's has not taken the fire out of this guy's soul. He was fired up, and you got a 60 plus year old man with Parkinson's disease picking up a 20 year old telling him he's going to kick his butt. So, you know, obviously, horrible, you know, diseases that are debilitating don't necessarily stop you from living your life. They just make you reevaluate what it is that you do to live your life. And you got to wonder sometimes, and this is sort of just a side note, but I've been in professions where we deal with people who are very sick, who are very ill, who have pretty much lost all ability to take care of themselves and need other people to do pretty much everything for them. They're almost just like a a living rag doll. They don't really have the ability to do a whole bunch, and you sort of wonder what kind of life they're really living. If all you can do all day long is lay in a bed, and your body is so crippled that you can't even lay straight, that usually you're laying in some weird way. You have to have pillows in different places to support parts of your body. And you have a hard time communicating with people what hurts you or what doesn't hurt you. You know, you sort of wonder, it's like, wow, this is what it's like to, you know, age and get old. But it's like, at the same time, you got to realize, well, not everybody's like that. So what makes it so some people are like that? And as my grandma always used to say, getting old is not for the weak. And, you know, the more I've seen people who have been in situations where, you know, every move you make on them is painful, and they're going through all these things, it's sort of crazy. And I just don't know. You sometimes wonder if getting in a car accident at 35 years old isn't the best way to go out, except for the fact you'd miss out on softball. And speaking of softball, ask me what I did this weekend. Aha, I'm glad you asked. I spent Sunday hitting 135 softballs. It was fun. I got a chance to go to a batting cage here on campus and spent time hitting the softball, getting my swing down. We got softball season starting up on Sunday, so I was out there practicing my swing, trying to get my timing down, trying to get my... I've been working for the last couple seasons on watching the ball into the bat and making sure I get a good rotation of the hips, which really makes a huge difference in the power that you put into the ball. I've gone back and forth from trying to be a power hitter to trying to be a finesse hitter. And the problem I run into is when I'm not sure which way I want to go. So I end up hitting the ball right to somebody with a little bit of power, and that just doesn't work. You know, as a finesse hitter, I like to put the ball right down the third base or the first baseline, right down the right field line. Usually the right fielder is one of the weakest positions on the field, and usually the right field line is left wide open. You could put a ball down that right field line, and unless the right fielder happens to be pretty close to where you hit it, you got an easy double almost every single time. So that's worked for me for a long time. Some of the teams I play against actually know me well enough as a hitter that they actually put somebody right on that right field line, which takes away that hit, which then means I got to look somewhere else for a hit. Not a big deal. I'll just hit it somewhere else. But at the same time, my softball teams, we've had issues with having enough people on the team that can hit for power to, when we get a couple people on base and we need a couple runs quickly, being able to hit the ball out of the park. And I have the ability to do it. I just have the mentality of being unsure of what I'm planning on doing when I get up to the box. Sometimes I get up there thinking, okay, I'm going to go down the right field line. I take a look. The right field line looks open. I see the pitch, and I go, oh, I'm going to hit that really hard. But then, you know, and it's just the whole getting in the right mindset. So I was working on that in the batting cage, thinking to myself, okay, my goal this season, this intramural season, I'll see how it goes, and if it goes well, I'll carry it over to the summer ball season. My goal this season is to not worry about putting it down the right field line, but my goal is to focus on hitting the ball hard. And if it goes right to somebody, then it goes right to somebody. But I'm going to put some fire under that ball, and I'm going to send it sailing. And the other part of that is when you do that, hitting it hard is not necessarily being out of control with your swing in such a way that you dip down and you pop the ball up, because that doesn't do anything for anybody. My goal is to hit the ball with good form, using power generated by rotating my hips correctly, using good form in my swing, using good coordination, watching the ball come in and hitting the bat, and getting a good level swing on the ball and having that ball hit very hard very quickly. That's the goal. We'll see how it works, and I'll try to report back if I'm not hitting like 100 on a season. So I spent some time in the batter's box or in the batting cage doing this, and it was pretty interesting because I went up through about 135 hits, and of those, I had some that were very nice, that were exactly what I was looking for. Power hits, just, I mean, the ones that feel so good that you don't even feel them coming off the bat. And if you have ever hit before, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The ones that you don't even feel, they felt great. Which seems sort of funny. You don't feel it, but it feels great. You do have a slight feel. And as soon as you get it, the great feeling is not the feeling you have in your hands, but it's the great feeling in your mind knowing, wow, I just smoked that ball. It was awesome. I wish I would have seen it fly, and I wish I would have seen people running with that ball flying over their heads as it's going to the fence, and I'm running the bases, going for the inside the park home run. But you're in a batting cage, you don't get a chance to see that. But you can imagine it. It makes you feel good. So anyway, I was doing that this weekend. It was a lot of fun. Softball season is coming up on the 25th. I got most of my team returning. Unfortunately, however, I've lost three players for sure. Three or four players. Two of them, though, were unexpected losses. One of them was Ben. He has been on the team for several seasons now. He's one of our good outfielders. He's a great hitter. He's one of the power hitters. As a matter of fact, his bat's going to be missed because he is a power hitter. He's fast and he's able to leg out some base hits. And he's a very fast guy in the outfield. Has a great arm. Knows how to play the outfield. Is a great team player, and so he's going to be missed both on the sidelines, hitting, and in the field. So that's going to be one that's going to be hard to replace. And he left early. He was supposed to be here for this one last season, but he ended up getting a job working out in the Seattle area. And that's sort of what happened to our other guy, who was here for one last season. And he joined the team actually as a true freshman. So he's been with the team for 4 years. This was going to be his eighth season with the team, his eighth and final season. And he had started out, between the time he started on the team and now, he's gone from being one of the worst hitters to pretty much the best hitter on the team as far as hitting for a high average. He's typically hitting 750 to 800 on a season, when originally he started the team hitting about 200 to 300. So his batting average has dramatically increased. He's a great teammate. He has always taken whatever position you put him in, and he's played it hard. He doesn't complain. He was he earned the starting position at second base, which has always been interesting because the guy who plays first base for us right now, he's been on the team ever since the beginning of the team in 1996. So this guy who plays, he had been a second baseman for a while, and more or less I moved him from second base to first base because of another person we got who played second base. And, you know, this guy, he started out as a first baseman, went over to third base, went to second base, got pushed back to first base, went back to second base when we had another guy that came in that played first base just as well, but wasn't very good in some of the other positions. So then Bryce, this guy who's now leaving, came in, and he finally got a home at second base, and that pushed the other guy, Ryan, who's been on the team since the beginning, back to first base. So Ryan has played all over the place. And with Bryce leaving prematurely, I wasn't expecting this. We've actually picked up, I happened to pick up another player in the offseason that I was planning on having him be a utility infielder. And that still might be the plans, but depending on how well he plays second base, he might become our new second baseman. But there's also the chance that he'll remain a utility infielder and that we'll move Ryan back from first base back to second base. And then I'll move to first base and we'll have Dave, our pitcher, be the full-time pitcher. And I won't pitch at all anymore, but we'll see how that goes. I do enjoy pitching, so we might keep it as is, where Dave and I switch off between pitcher and catcher, and Ryan stays at first, and the new guy goes to second. And I'm also looking at picking up a couple other players for the team to help fill in for the outfield. We got a couple decent pickups, or really good pickups, for shortstop last season. Unfortunately, I think this is going to be his final season with us. So the team's definitely in a lot of flux right now. We've, like I said, we've lost a couple players that I wasn't expecting to lose. I was pretty much expecting the whole team to return this year, and unfortunately we're losing two key players. So it's going to be interesting to see how we bounce back from that loss and how the new people on the team will fill in the gaps and whatnot. So I will keep everybody updated on that, and we're planning on playing in the softball scramble coming up on Thursday. And we'll definitely be playing men's competitive Sunday night ball. So if you're interested in playing softball and you want to go up against our team, go ahead and sign up for Sunday night's competitive softball, and we'll get a chance to go out there and play some ball against one another. I just have to warn you right now that we will beat you. Alrighty, so there's been quite a few things that have been sort of bothering me and just annoying me, and unfortunately a lot of them I have not really written down, so I can't really get into them right now. But I did talk about the whole secure and the whole idea of prisons being secure, and I want to relate that to something in a little bit. But just sort of an interesting side note, this town of Anderson, Alaska, population of about 800 people, the town was formed back in the 50s, is right now getting ready to give away 1 1/3 acre plots to people, and the requirement is that you have to build a house of at least 1,000 square feet on it within, I believe, 2 years of getting this land. It's in Alaska, but their summers can get up to 90 degrees. Their winters, though, can get down to negative 60. They have beautiful views of Mount McKinley, a lot of good hunting, fishing type stuff. And if you don't know about the area of Alaska, there's no property tax, no income tax, no sales tax. So everything you earn, you keep in Alaska. Except there's federal tax, but other than that, you're not paying anything to the state. And as a matter of fact, my understanding is with Alaska, you actually get dividends from all the oil as it is in Alaska. So they almost pay you to live up in Alaska. This town is sort of a bedroom community for one of the local Air Force bases. There is several other job opportunities. It doesn't seem like any of them are high tech. They're mostly blue collar type work. The town itself doesn't have a grocery store or a gas station, but closest one is about 20 miles away. But they're hoping with the new people that they bring in with this concept that they'll be able to get some entrepreneurs in there who want to build a store, a gas station, whatever. And it was interesting, their co-ed basketball team, or excuse me, their basketball team recently had to go to co-ed because they had so few boys to play on the team. So they've actually gone to a co-ed basketball team. So they're hoping as part of this land grab that they get families to go in as well. Alrighty. Now, you've heard me this season on the PES stress over and over and over and over again. Look in the mirror, and that's my way of saying take responsibility for your own actions. You got to look at yourself before you start looking at other people for the problem of what you're having. You are where it starts, not somebody else. It's not somebody else's fault they left a ladder out that you climbed onto their roof and fell off. No, that's not their fault. That's your fault for climbing the ladder. Are you that insanely stupid that you figured that, well, the ladder's there, therefore it must be safe for me to climb up on the roof? The thing is, you've got to look at your actions before you blame somebody else. I don't care that they left the ladder out. They should have put the ladder away. No, you should have stayed off it. I should charge you $50 for using my ladder. I mean, really, take responsibility for your own actions. It should not be up to the other person 100% of the time to watch out for you. You need to watch out for yourself. When you cross the road and a car hits you because you stepped out within 3 feet of the car, is it the car's fault or is it your fault? Well, it's going to be your fault because you didn't look. Now, if you walk out in the crosswalk and a car that's a couple blocks away decides to speed up and hit you, of course that's going to be their fault. But you can't step right in front of a car and then blame the car. You got to take responsibility for your actions. You would never do such a stupid thing because you know that's going to get you killed or hurt. But you will sue somebody left and right for things that you also very well should have known will get you hurt or killed, but you go ahead and do it anyway, and then when you do get hurt, you decide, oh, I'm going to do a lawsuit. I think what we need to do is pour a bucket of hot coffee on anybody who files a lawsuit over something that they did that was their stupidity that caused them to get hurt, and then they turn around and try to sue somebody for their stupidity. So anyway, some of my rules for life. First one is follow the three R's. Respect for self, respect for others, and responsibility for your actions. You can see why I like that one. You have to have respect for yourself before anybody else will respect you. If you don't respect yourself and you don't treat yourself with some sort of dignity, if you don't walk upright, if you're not able to look people in the eyes when you talk, if you're not able to say anything good about yourself, why would anybody else do such a thing? If all you could say are horrible things about yourself, why would you then expect me later on to come up and try to contradict you? I'm not going to contradict you on you. Respect for others. Once again, the golden rule, treat others how you want to be treated. I think that it's pretty self-explanatory why people should respect each other and why people should respect others. Even if you're not getting it back from certain people, you should still put out the respect towards them. Show them who the bigger man is. Other people will see it and other people will know, and the truth will be out there. You will be the bigger man, and people won't respect the other person. And responsibility for your actions. Look in the mirror. If you do something that's boneheaded and you get hurt in the process, chalk it up to a learning experience. Maybe you won't do it again. It's like touching the hot stove. You touch a hot stove and it burns you. Ouch. Guess what? You're probably not going to do it again. And this goes along with taking responsibility for your actions. If you do something that was boneheaded, say, you know what? Shouldn't have done it. My bad. Or if you do something that causes problems, don't try to hide it. Don't try to sneak away from it and hope that somebody notices it well after you're gone. Take responsibility. Speak up. Be a man. Look somebody in the eye and say, hey, I messed that up. My bad. Sorry. And take responsibility for what you did. If you get in trouble for it, well, guess what? You deserved to get in trouble because you did something wrong. But you know what? You took the responsibility for the actions that you have done. You've taken the punishment for the actions you've done. And there is respect in that. Remember, this is so true. Remember that not getting what you want is sometimes a wonderful stroke of luck. And I believe this pretty wholeheartedly. I've always believed that things will happen that are for the best for you. And I don't know if it's best to call this fate or what it is, but the bottom line is sometimes you want something really, really, really bad and you don't get it and you're really bummed, which of course you're going to be really bummed if you didn't get something that you really, really wanted and you tried really hard for it. But you might not see it that day. You probably won't see it that day. You might not see it a week or two down the road, but I bet a year down the road you'll look back on that and you'll look at where you currently are, what kind of opportunities that have come to you since then. And you'll look back going, you know, if I had gotten what I wanted then, I wouldn't have what I have now, and I might not be as happy. At the time, it would have been great if, say, I had gotten a certain job, or it might have been great if I had been able to qualify to buy this house. But then a year down the road, you look at it, you're like, gosh, if I bought that house, I would have been paying almost everything I had in the mortgage. And this new job that just came up over in some other city that I'm going to take, where I'm going to make a whole bunch of money, I might not be able to easily take it because I'll have this huge house payment over here and I don't want to get into financial troubles. And I'm tied down because of this house instead of the apartment that I still had to rent. So you didn't get something that you really wanted, but you can look back on it and say, wow, that was a stroke of luck. So remember that. Just because you didn't get something that you wanted might very well be a stroke of luck when you look at it in the rearview mirror. And I can say that has been the case in several things that I've really wanted really badly, and then I look back on it and realize, well, this was definitely for the better, because you could almost say that there was a plan for my life and that I have free will to a certain point, but things that I'm not supposed to have, I'm not going to get because it would distract me from the purpose of what my life is for. And this one is sort of a humorous one, but I think it's very far-reaching, is learn the rules so you know how to break them properly. And I think if you really take that one into consideration and you really think about that, that really makes a lot of sense. The person who is able to color outside the lines the best is the one who understands all the rules. When you know every single rule of baseball, inside and out, upside and down, and you know what you can and can't do, and you know what you can get away with, even though technically it could be breaking the rules, you are able to argue your way out of it. When you know certain rules, you know which ones you can break and get away with, and that's the whole point, is you know how to properly break the rules. I think that one is, you know, it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek, but at the same time, I think it's pretty important that you understand all the background of a certain thing before you can properly manipulate some of these things. And I sometimes think that that's pretty important, knowing the rules so you know how to break them properly. It has been about an hour. I have one major subject left. I'm sure Batman will be calling in to help make sure the city of Pullman is safe from the evil clutches of Pard and their Crimson Village hating no action ways. We also have, actually, I got two more things. I still need to talk about the idea of the secure prisons and IKEA. How politically correct of them to start charging the U.S. customers for plastic bags? In the meantime, we're going to hear from the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heats. Listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Reach us on the telephone at 335-2207, on the web at www.kzuu.org, and on our website, www.thepes.com. The high school equivalency program at WSU welcomes volunteers to participate as tutors for adult GED students. Fluent Spanish speakers are especially needed. This is a wonderful opportunity to acquire teaching experience. Contact Priscilla Haystay at 335-5652 or go to Cleveland Hall, rooms 21 to 23 for more information. Volunteers wanted. The Women's Transit is looking for drivers and dispatch volunteers. All volunteers will receive hands-on training. Cars, gas, and insurance are provided. Receive academic credit while giving back to the community. To sign up, come by the Women's Resource Center at Wilson Hall, room 8, or call 335-6849. Speaking Japanese, if you please. Learn Japanese for free. Everyone is welcome to join in on the good times at Neal Public Library every Tuesday. Beginners can learn about Japanese culture and basic speaking and writing skills from 4 to 5 p.m. Intermediate students will focus on grammar and vocabulary from 5 to 5:45, and advanced classes with one-on-one teaching meets 5:45 to 6:30. Contact Kimi Hirose at 432-3903 or the Neal Public Library at 334-3595 for more information. If you have any comments or questions or concerns, feel free to contact KZUU at 509-335-2208 or email gm@kzuu.org. KZUU DJs Republic Service announcements like what you heard just every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in rooms 126B of Smith Gym or fill out a form online located under the staff button and email it to psa@kzuu.org. For more information, call our office 335-2208. Welcome back. And if you are a listener, a regular of the show, I don't even need to tell you who that was. But for everybody else, that was a favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heats. Ah, yes. You got to love the Reverend, especially this beautiful, beautiful Monday after a wonderful spring break, a wonderful time away from school where you had a chance to do everything you wanted to do except go to school, which I guess for some people is sort of a weekly thing for them. Sort of like one of the things I learned when I went to college is that no matter how late I scheduled my first class, I still would sleep through it. Or that in reality, psychology is really biology, and biology is really chemistry, and chemistry is really physics, and physics is really math. There's a whole bunch more of those things that I never realized when I went to college that I could talk to you about a little bit later on. And while we're being in a little bit of a more fun mood, let's talk about this. Okay. This is the poetry you've all been waiting for. I don't know how I'll do with it. I didn't practice probably nearly as much as I should have, and I'll see if I can't do it without twisting myself at least once, like I do whenever I read the PSAs. Even though this one that I've read three times a day, every day for the last couple years, and I still have to look at the card, and I still don't get it right every single time. KZUU DJs read public service announcements like what you heard every hour. And see, I missed the word just, and it's written right there. It's not like I can't see it. So that's the problem is that I'm missing words that I'm seeing. It's like I'm reading what I think I remember and not what I'm really reading. And, you know, people like Glenn Johnson, they amaze me. When he's out there doing the announcing for the men's basketball game, you can see him down there looking at a piece of paper and reading it word for word. And he doesn't sit there and get all tongue twisted like I do and then have to back up and redo it. It's amazing. I guess it's, you know, years and years and years of doing it. And maybe he has a couple secrets and maybe he's learned the way to do it. But that's the reason why I always had a hard time proofreading my own papers. And I still have a hard time proofreading my papers is because I know what I think I wrote. Sounds sort of funny. I know what I think I wrote. And the reason why I say it like that is because I think I wrote X, Y, and Z. I really wrote A, B, and C, but my mind is reading the X, Y, and Z version because that's what I think that I had actually put down on paper. And that's why. And that's why it's so hard for me to read what I've actually written. Sorry about that. I accidentally turned off my microphone. So anyway, let me try that again. I'm going to read word for word what this says. KZUU DJs read public service announcements like what you just heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in Smith Gym Room 126B or fill out the form online located under the staff button and email it to psa@kzuu.org. For more information, call our office at 335-2208. So there you go. I read it word for word and it worked. So now that I'm on a roll, let me try this. Like I said, this is one of those little silly poems that I'm sure you saw or have read as a little kid. You might have almost forgotten about this one. You're like, oh, wow, yeah, that was cool. And you might be going, that is so stupid. I can't believe he actually did that. So if you're recording the show right now, go ahead and turn off the tape recorder, please. I don't want anybody to have any tape recordings of this particular thing happening because I don't want any evidence or proof that this has taken place. So anyway, here we go. Okay. I'm almost debating on doing it myself, so, okay, here we go. I'll do this just once, and I probably won't do this again, even if everybody says do it one more time. I will not do this again. This is going to be the one and only time you'll ever hear this on the PES. But it's fun, and it is a Monday. I mean, I would prefer to do this on a Friday. It's definitely a much more of a Friday thing. It's, you know, casual Friday, the dress-down Friday, the fun thing to do on a Friday. Monday seems to be too early in the week to do this, but you know, I feel so good. It feels to me, in some ways, today feels like a Friday, and I don't know why, because this whole week was pretty long. I mean, it really seemed like it was longer than a week, and for whatever reason, today seems like a Friday. So here we go. Okay, maybe not. I'm trying to build up the trying to build up the courage to do this. Okay. Here we go. The famous speaker who no one heard of said, "Ladies and jelly spoons, hobos and tramps, cross-eyed mosquitoes and bow-legged ants, I stand before you to sit behind you to tell you something I know nothing about. Next Thursday, which is Good Friday, there's a Mother's Day meeting for fathers only. Wear your best clothes if you have any. Come if you can't. If you can't, stay at home. Admission is free. Pay at the door. Pull up a chair and sit on the floor. It makes no difference where you spit. The man in the gallery sure to spit. The show is over, but before you go, let me tell you a story I really don't know. One bright day in the middle of the night, two dead boys got up to fight. Back to back, they faced each other, drew their swords and shot each other. A deaf policeman heard the noise and came and killed the two dead boys. A paralyzed donkey passing by kicked the blind man in the eye, knocking him through a 9-inch wall into a dry ditch and drowned them all. If you don't believe this lie is true, ask the blind man. He saw it too." There you go. All right. I hope that put everybody in a good mood. Now let me just start to tick you off all over again. Okay, IKEA is planning to charge its U.S. customers for plastic bags. That's right, those bags that you use when you go shopping. And the question is, when are the other stores going to start doing this? At what point in time will stores like Safeway and Dismore's and everywhere else where you might do shopping, when are they going to all of a sudden start charging people for getting bags or having bags to get their groceries in or whatever else. So that it'll be interesting. But anyway, IKEA is announcing plans to start charging customers, U.S. customers, for the plastic bags. Now, they can bring their own bags, whether they're recycled bags or reusable bags, and they won't get charged, obviously, because they're not using plastic bags. And IKEA will actually have bags of theirs that you can buy. How nice of them. And then you won't get charged for the use of the plastic bags. Now, it's a nominal fee, but it's still, you're getting charged money for using these bags. And the aim is to eventually eliminate these plastic bags altogether, the proceeds of which are going to a forest group. So, yay, it's an all-around touchy feel-good story about those anti-environmental capitalistic shoppers who are going out and buying things and putting them in plastic bags and then throwing the bags away to sit in a landfill for billions and billions and billions of years and to get around the noses of dolphins and suffocate them. And then all the money that us evil people are spending is going to a forest group to help grow forests, I guess, or maybe to help log them. I'm not sure. They didn't say what forest group, but okay. So here's my plan to deal with places that are going to charge you for bags. Just say, "Nah, no bag. Go ahead and, yeah, but I do need help to the car." So don't have them bag anything up because, A, you don't want to pay for it, and, B, you're not bringing your own bags. But then you demand help to the car because, you know, they have the courtesy clerks to do that kind of thing. So they're going to just push this cart out to your car full of random groceries, and they're going to have to take each item and put it into your vehicle. And I would think that if everybody does that and all these courtesy clerks are spending 15 minutes unloading all these carts, they're going to realize that the 5 or 10 cents that they're charging people for the bags is definitely not worth it. Then again, most people probably bring their own bags and they won't deal with the whole situation. But my plan is, if they don't want to supply me with the bags to put my purchases in it, I could either choose not to purchase things from them, or I can say, "Okay, fine, I'll play your game. Go ahead, don't put anything in a bag and come help me take it to my car." So I was in a thought about this when I was thinking about the idea of national ID cards. You know, this subject seems to be on my mind a lot, the idea of national ID cards. And it's because it's so prevalent right now. Unfortunately, it's not prevalent enough. I'm seeing it everywhere. But then again, I'm looking for some of these kinds of articles where a lot of people aren't really looking at it. I mean, the only people that are harping on this whole issues of having biometrics encoded in cards are the tinfoil hat brigade, which everybody laughs at. You don't have the mainstream press releases going to the big newspapers talking about some of these issues that are out there with this idea of the government having databases of information about you in order to, quote-unquote, make you safer, which, once again, I argue is, first off, why do they need that information? What are they planning to do with that information? And their answer, of course, is going to be, "Well, nothing. We're not going to do anything." Fine, then you don't need it. There's not a single thing they're going to do with that data that they need it for. There's no reason why the government today needs data like that. The only reason why they would need that data is because they're planning on being able to use it against you in the future. You might not believe that. Go ahead and, you know, call me a tin hatter myself. I have tin foil at home. Maybe I am a tin hatter, but I believe that we are already going down the path of less freedoms, less anonymity. We've already started down that path. And as scary as it is, England seems to be much farther down the path than we are. But we seem to be trying to catch up. We're doing what we can to say, hey, hold on, let us get up. You know, and here we are sprinting up onto them, you know, and hey, guys, wait up, let me catch up. And we're trying. You know, England actually, they're trying to put a device on motorcycles that will allow the government to know where the motorcycles were. And here's the scary part, to actually cut the throttle of a motorcycle that is speeding too much. So if you're speeding a little bit, it's okay, maybe. But if you're speeding too much, they're going to cut your throttle, which means you're going to slow down. So, well, what if you're speeding because you're passing cars? Maybe you're passing them illegally, and you probably shouldn't be doing the pass. But at the same time, you're passing all sorts of cars, and there's another vehicle coming, and you got to speed up. But all of a sudden, this device goes, oh, he's going too fast. I better slow him down. And it slows you down, and you go head-on with the semi-truck because you weren't able to go as fast as you knew that you needed to go because you got this inanimate object with no ability to think, with zero common sense. And it slows you down, and boom, you go head-first into a semi-truck. Well, yeah, that's good. I am totally against inanimate objects just all of a sudden starting a certain thing. For instance, in your vehicle, you might have governors right now that restrict your vehicle from going over a certain speed. But what it's not doing is allowing you to get to a certain speed and then cutting you back. It's saying, okay, now you're at your top speed, you're not going anymore. And that's a lot different than when you're doing 100 down the freeway because you're passing a whole bunch of cars that you probably ought not to be passing to begin with. And all of a sudden this thing's like, oh, he needs to be doing no more than 75, and it cuts you back to 75, and boom, you go head on with the semi-truck or something. You know, maybe that won't happen. I don't know. But is the potential there? Isn't that all it needs to be is the potential? What about the idea that, you know, we already talked about Britain fingerprinting all these kids, having everybody's fingerprints on file? Does that not go, wait a minute here, this is ridiculous? Right now they already have my name and date of birth. Why is it that they all of a sudden need fingerprints and iris scans and maybe facial scans, maybe DNA samples? You know, at what point, if they're going to coerce people into giving iris scans, if they're going to coerce people to giving facial scans, and they are coercing people to give fingerprints, at what point are they going to be able to coerce you into giving DNA samples? Really? I mean, what's going to stop them from doing that? All they do is they hold driving over your head. And this is where I almost have to say that we need to make driving more closer to the line of a privilege and less of make it closer to being a right and less of a privilege. Because right now is a privilege. They can do anything they want with it and hold it over your head because, after all, it is only a privilege. You have the privilege to drive. And you don't have to. But if you do want to, you're going to give us your fingerprints and your picture, your date of birth, your local current address that's not a P.O. box to fall in line with the Real ID Act. You can't use P.O. boxes. You got to use an actual physical address. And we're going to go ahead and want your signature and your date of birth and your sex, height, weight, eye color. You know, we got the picture of you, so we know your hair color. Yeah, we're going to want all this information if you plan on driving a car. And realistically, why do they need all that information for you to drive a car? I'm just as shocked as it by you. I mean, have you ever questioned why do you need to know all this information for me to be able to drive a car? Well, you got to have a license. Well, it's interesting. Look at my a concealed pistol license in the state of Washington. You don't get a picture taken, but you have to have a picture for a car license. What's the difference? One of them is licensing you to be able to carry a concealed pistol, and one of them is licensing you to be able to drive a car. Why is one of them? Why do you have to give certain piece of information on one of them, but not another one? once again, the government is coercing people into giving up information about themselves so the government can sort it into a database. And think about what happens, what they do with this database when they need to look up stuff. If they need to do a search, let's say they want to find everybody who has certain characteristics, boom, they have a database with people with all these different characteristics, and they can get a list of people to start going questioning or whatever else. There's no real anonymity. So at what point, how can you get driving to be more of a right where the government's like, okay, you still need to get licensed, you still have to do certain things like voting, for instance. It's a right to vote, but you still have to be 18 to do it. So they can still put restrictions on driving, even if it's a right. You have a right to drive, but you have to be 16 to exercise it, or you have to be 18 to exercise it. But it's a right insofar as they can't start throwing all these additional things. Like, in order for you to have the right to drive, you got to give your fingerprints up. Well, no, we're not going to fall for that anymore. It's a right. You can't take it away because I'm refusing to give you my fingerprints. We need to get to that point with driving. Driving is so far from being a privilege anymore that I think we need to recognize what it is and go and make it reflect that within law and realize that the ability of the government to use this over our head to secure data about us, to store it in their databases, is over. We need to get past that. So we're following England in all sorts of things. We have, think about right now, you drive out on the streets, you look around, there's video cameras all over the place. Government ones, there's private ones. Not going to be much you can do about the private ones. If people want to have a private video camera that's pointing on their land, fine, so be it. That's their right. That's their land. If the government starts putting them up, you know, and you could, and as long, and where I'm going also, like I said, if it's on their land and it's pointing at their land, I'm cool with it. If it's pointing out to other areas, then there needs to be a little bit more to it. You need to have the ability to, you need to maybe would have the right, if somebody's recording in a public place like that, they need to in some way give warning that this is being recorded on public place. Like most stores, when you go into them, they have video cameras that actually show you you're on videotape as soon as you walk in the door. And that's their property. That's their right. You have the choice to go or not to go there. But when you have video surveillance on public land and used by the government, that's where I really start questioning, okay, I know why the store guy is doing it, because he's trying to protect the store, and if somebody robs him, boom, he has videotape to give to the police. Well, once again, I'm choosing to go there. But now I'm talking public locations, public places. I'm walking downtown Pullman. Should I have to think that there's video cameras that are being monitored and controlled by some government agency somewhere? What about the video cameras that they're talking about having that are going to face Martin Stadium, that are going to be in Martin Stadium? Is that a concern? What are they going to use with those cameras? Are they going to start using it to pick out people who are illegally smuggling large quantities of alcohol for them to consume during the game time? Are they going to start focusing on people who are flipping off the referees for making bad calls? I mean, what are these cameras going to be used for? What kind of horrible crimes are going on in Martin Stadium right now that we need to have video camera surveillance on Martin Stadium? But once again, we have the red light cameras. You run a red light, boom, you get a picture taken of your car. You get a ticket in the mail. You have to sign paperwork that says, no, that really wasn't me driving. They have things like that for radar as well. You could get in England and in Europe, you can get speeding tickets via mail because you've gone past a certain point in the road where there's a video camera or where there's a radar gun and a picture, and boom, you get a speeding ticket in the mail. Think about that kind of law enforcement that would go on. Think about all the other applications they could have in law enforcement. What if they started doing that with jaywalkers? What if they at some point are able, because of facial scans and retinal scans, because they're forcing you to take those, they can see you walking across the road illegally, and all of a sudden jaywalking tickets start popping up. What about other things that they could start ticketing you for? What if you spit your gum out on the road or dropped a candy wrap or something like that? Maybe even unintentionally. You drop a candy wrapper, boom, the camera saw it, got your iris scan, you're getting a letter in the mail with a ticket for littering. You think that's far-fetched? What do you think people who said, there's no way you're going to have some inanimate object out on the side of a freeway that's going to send out a speeding ticket to somebody? Do you think 50 years ago they thought that was that was too far-fetched, that that would never happen. I don't think it's too far-fetched to think that we're going to start seeing other kind of laws enforced by video, by inanimate objects. And if they get those iris scans, they can tell who you are. They get the facial and the iris scans, boom. Now they know who you are. Just like your license plate is giving you away in your car, now your iris scans, your facial scans are giving you away to the government. And they could enforce laws without having anybody there. And it is a system where there is no ability to reason. It's a boom, you did it, no ability to reason. If you were to walk down the road and you dropped a candy wrapper and a cop saw you do it because he was walking down the same road, he could say, hey, excuse me, you in the red shirt, come here a second. He'll talk to you and say, hey, why did you drop that candy wrapper? Oh, you know what? There's a hole in my pocket. My bad. I'm sorry. Go pick it up. Throw it away. Boom. Problem solved. But no, you have an inanimate object doing it. You have no ability to discuss or reason this stuff. Boom. It happens. You get a ticket. It sounds far-fetched, but I don't believe that we're going to be 30 years away from that. If the ability of having iris scans is not unchecked, if the ability to have biometric information from the government goes unchecked, you will see that kind of stuff happen. I need to talk about the secure and the prisons and stuff like that, but right now we also need to listen to the Reverend, the favorite of the PES, the Reverend, Reverend Horton Heath. Alrighty. So we were talking a little bit about the idea of the cars and the speeding mechanisms they have in it, and we got a caller on the telephone who had some information about some of that stuff. Can you hear me, Satanic Mechanic? No, yes, maybe. Uh-oh. I wonder if he's on a cell phone or he's having that same problem that we have with the other people. Because I'm not hearing him at all, if he can hear me. So anyway. What was interesting and something I wanted to get at, but I totally went off on a tangent, was the what if you did have a situation where you had, say, a motorcycle or even a car, and you're driving down the freeway, but you have a frontage road really close to it, and your GPS system can't quite tell the difference between the frontage road and the road you're on, so the GPS thinks you're on the frontage road where the speed limit's, say, 35. And you're on the freeway and you're stuck doing 35 miles an hour because your GPS system thinks you're on this frontage road and it's not letting you go more than 35 miles an hour. Think about how maddening that would be. And what I was being told is there's some countries that have that they have systems in the car that when you go over a certain speed, it doesn't necessarily stop you from doing so, but it has a very annoying buzzing sound going on in the car that causes you to want to slow down just due to the buzzing noise. Sort of like back in the day, we used to have a Honda Civic from the early 80s that if you didn't buckle the seatbelt, it had this buzzing noise. And it wasn't one of those ones that would go off after the first few seconds. It stayed on the whole entire time the car was started. So rather than wearing a seatbelt, this was back in the 80s, rather than wearing a seatbelt, what we actually did was we would actually buckle the seatbelt behind us into the seat. And this wasn't me. This was my parents. I was way young to be driving back then. But they would buckle the seatbelt in behind them and then just sit sort of on top of it. So the seatbelt was always buckled just around the seat itself. But it would stop this noise from happening, which was pretty interesting. You know, in some of the newer vehicles now, they have it set up so it doesn't have a continuous noise, but say every minute you'll get this dinging, this loud dinging noise for a few seconds if you're not wearing your seatbelt. But I looked in my manual for my truck, and it showed how you could get rid of that dinging noise from happening. So I can drive down the road without the annoying dinging noises if I'm not wearing my seatbelt. And it was very interesting. It's like you had to take the key in and out of the ignition a couple times. You had to click and unclick the seatbelt a couple times. It's like doing the hokey pokey. But I got it done, and I was pretty happy about that. Hey, Satanic Mechanic, do we got you on the phone now? No? Oh. Okay. So what I was getting towards is the idea of security. And what I was talking about now is the lack of privacy that we have. And why do we have that? It's about security. It's about the idea of making you more safe and more secure. Think about the idea that if there's cameras on these street corners, it's going to stop people from committing crimes. Therefore, the average Joe is safer. However, the average Joe is also in the same system, so everything the average Joe does is being recorded. Now, granted, you'll say, well, I have nothing to hide, so I don't care. Well, it's not about having nothing to hide. It's about the fact that a free society doesn't have the ability to live a free life. They're living under the scrutiny of the government at all times. And that's the point. It's not whether you have something to hide or not. So think about this. We keep on giving up these liberties little by little in order to feel more secure. But think about, say, prison. Prison. You've given up all sorts of securities or liberties. You've given up the liberty for controlling your life. You've given up the liberty of deciding where to go and when to go where, what to wear, what not to wear, what to eat, what not to eat. You give up the privilege of living a lifestyle where you aren't subjected to random searches, say airports. You're not subject to you're subjected to living under the constant demands of other people telling you where you can go, when you can go there, what you can and can't do, having video surveillance of you at almost all times, not having any real privacy left. Everything about you is known by other people, and they control your life. You're essentially living a shell of a real life. Think about how that prison is. But now the question is it really secure? Do you believe that those prisoners are secure? Do you believe that inside, because they've given up all these rights and all this anonymity, that they are secure from other people? That they're secure from being injured or hurt by terrorists within the own jails? I mean, think about like all you see shows all the time about the kind of crime that goes on behind bars. And nobody's willing to speak up about it because they know that if they speak up, they're going to have harsh punishments befall upon them by their other inmates. Think about the kinds of crimes that are going on. Supposedly, with all the searches and everything that happens with these people and the lack of weapons, no guns. No guns are allowed. You're not allowed to have knives. You're not allowed to have all sorts of weapons inside of a jail, yet people get killed in jail. How does that happen? How does that happen in such a high secure place? Well, the reason why it happens is because you cannot totally secure anything. You can try, but it's not going to happen. And what you're going to do is you're going to make it miserable for the majority of the people because you're trying to secure it against a couple bad people. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. I'd rather live a life with the freedoms that I have than to live in a world cooped up by constant monitoring for the illusion of security. I would rather risk the chance that someday somebody might do something that causes me injury or death and live free for the rest of my life than to be totally monitored 24/7 and still have the chance of getting blown up by somebody. I think that if you think about the idea of a prison and the kinds of things it takes away from people, the kinds of securities and liberties, the kind of liberties and freedoms it takes away from somebody, and the fact that there is no real security there, even though that's the whole point of it, think about that's what we are asking our government. And I shouldn't say all of us. Some of us are asking our government to do just that. Some of us are asking our government to take away willingly. We're willingly giving the government the freedom to take away our freedoms, to take away our liberties, to take away our anonymity. And we're not demanding them to stop from taking away some of our privacy, such as our biometric information, such as iris scans. When is DNA going to hit? It will hit. If they're going to be able to take iris scans and they can already force you to do fingerprints, what are the things that are going to force you to do? It's all about the freedoms. What about someday down the road, they say, okay, the only people that can file tax returns. Social Security numbers will be a thing of the past because those can be easily manipulated, stolen by somebody else. There's no proof of that, who it is. On and on and on. We're going to go away from that. We're going to have to do something else. What we're going to do is we're going to do a right thumbprint. Everybody has to use right thumb. Now, if you, for whatever reason, lost your right hand, right thumb, whatever, maybe you use your left. Maybe if you lost both, you'd use a foot. And if you have none of those, maybe you'd have to do iris scans. I don't know. But the point is, you're going to have to use some sort of biometric information that you send in with your tax return in the future, not just some number and a signature, as all that stuff can be pretty easily forged. So you put this information down and you send it in. Now, if the government does not have that information on you, they will not file your tax return. They will not process your tax return, and you will not get a refund. They'll gladly collect your taxes, but they'll not give you a refund because you haven't given them the biometric information necessary in order to qualify your tax return and tie it to with who you really are. So that's the way the government will keep more money. But if you want your tax return, if you want your money returned to you at the end of the year that you have coming back to you, you better give them your biometric information. Otherwise, they can't confirm who you are, and they can't confirm it, so therefore they won't give you a tax return. Think that's far-fetched? Well, don't you think that some people think the idea that we'd have some 9-digit number and a signature being passed to the federal government every year in order to get some sort of refund off of a federal tax would have been a foreign concept to the people who framed the Constitution? You bet your butt that was a foreign idea. But they're doing it now. So just because it might be a foreign idea and seems outrageous to us today, in 20 years, it's not going to be all that outrageous. Think about all the kinds of things that we have technology-wise today that people wouldn't have even really thought of in the, say, the 80s or the 70s especially, or the 60s and the 50s. Who would have thought that each of us in our pockets will have a telephone that you could punch numbers 1 through 2 through 9 and have it have a message and then hit a button and it magically over the air goes to somebody else's phone immediately and they can read it. Think about that concept. That's just wow. That would be amazing. But it's here. Nobody even thinks twice about it. So what's going to be, what is it going to be for us to think twice about other things that can happen and that will happen due to the technology that we have out here? And as we become more technology savvy, as we become more willing to accept this technology, as we become more willing to put our information out there for everybody to see and read, this feeling of anonymity has really gone away. And a lot of it is us on the choosing, but that's okay if you choose to do it. Where it becomes a problem is when you are forced to do it. As a matter of fact, I was in a conversation with somebody real recently about Facebook. And the thing that was brought up was there's all this information that you choose to input about yourself in Facebook. You put pictures online. Some of them might not be ones that you want posted. Other people might post pictures about you might not want up there. You put information about where you work, what your phone number is, your contact information, what you like, what you might not like. You network with friends. You have all this stuff, and it's pretty neat. You get a chance to network with people, chat back and forth on their discussion boards, and join all these groups and whatnot. But this person was telling me that somebody, a friend of hers, decided she didn't want her account anymore and deleted the account. Well, okay, no big deal. So she deleted the account. It's gone. Well, sometime later, she decides, no, okay, I'll have an account now, but I'm only going to put minimal information on it. She went to create an account, and when she did, boom, all the old stuff was still there. So it was never actually deleted. It was remaining in the database, so Facebook information. So the question that I would have then is if you make a change to any of your likes and dislikes and photos and whatnot, do they actually get deleted or does it get saved in the database and you just get a new record? And when the page is displayed, it looks for the newest record to display, but all your old information is still there and always archived. And if that's the case, at what point down the road can this information be given to other people or subpoenaed by law enforcement agencies or other people in order to get information about you? What of this information is going to come up in the presidential races of 21 years from now? Because, let's see here, it's 2007, we got a race next year. So let's add, 5 terms from now. So 21 years from now, or 25 years from now, what information that people are putting on their Facebook page today is going to start coming up in political races or start coming up in other places if this information is actually not deleted and is saved or on a MySpace page or your personal website or anywhere else. Where is this information all of a sudden going to start coming up with? But here's the thing. You, me, anybody else who has those has chosen to display that information. And that was our choice. That was our right. That's our right that we want to take it down when we want to take it down. That's our right to put it up there when we put it up there. It's our right to do with it because we are choosing to do it on our own. Where it becomes a problem is when the government forces you to give that information up. They coerce it out of you. But what I'm getting at is that we're getting into a society where people feel so okay with putting that information online that they might not understand the difference between that and the government forcing you to take it or the forcing you to give it to them. So there's definitely a big difference between the two. And unfortunately, I think that the comfort level of the internet and the comfort level of the online world and the comfort level of the technology is causing people to be comfortable with doing those things. So we'll see how things start shaking out, but I guess I like to harp on it myself because I think it's really important that we realize that we can give up our freedoms, we can give up our rights, we could live like we're in a prison, but look at it. We're no more secure than we were. We're no more secure than anybody else. It's not about security. It's about having all this information about you to use in some other way that you don't know what they're going to do with it someday down the road. You've listened to my rants about Pard and the Crimson Village, the new and improved Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County, the peace protesters, the bicyclists who are clogging up traffic in Pullman, and Anderson, Alaska. Once again, this is PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. And coming up next is the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat.